Robert Clark, State
We're doing
Representative from
this.
Holmes County, March 28, 1974.
What is the countywide meeting in Holmes County is what?
Well, you have, this is what we're talking about, the countywide, FDP meeting, that's the Freedom Democratic Party, where you have about 17 communities throughout Holmes County. And they meet on a regular basis, some every week, supposed to be every week, but some bi-weekly and some monthly. Then once per month, they have all of these precincts and communities come together for the countywide meeting. And you not only have all of the precincts coming there from, you know, each community being represented, but you have all of the civil rights and anti-poverty organizations and economic development organizations. And everything in the black community comes in and comes together. And everybody give a progress report on what they have done. And since the last meeting, and then if there are any problems, then these problems are thrown out before the countywide and they're thrashed out there. But major problems comes from the community to the FDP Executive Board. Then the executive board takes action, and if they turns the action down, if the action is negative or positive, then it has to come to the countywide for final approval. And this is very much the way that the county is running.
Does it work or is it cumbersome?
It has worked, but it needs overhauling definitely. Now, you know, the method is not outdated, but we need to add new blood, you know, because when you have this type of democracy, this causes people to grow. You know, we might have started out some years ago with just a very few leaders, people that could serve in leadership positions. See, but when you have this type of meetings and various communities, then individuals will grow and you will develop new leaders. And if you aren't very careful, you'll find your new leaders and your old leaders fighting. The old leaders will be fighting trying to hold on, and the new leaders will be fighting for position and leadership. But the reason I'm saying that it has to be updated is that the old leadership got to make room for the new individuals that they're trying to develop. In other words, they're doing something and really they don't realize how great it is what they're doing. They don't realize that they're developing other people. And once they're developed, they're not going to stay dominant, you know. They're going to want to become active. And it works.
Well, if you can work that out, it's a real contribution to human development.
Probably.
I mean, that's the problem with every developmental program. As you develop the leadership, you got to put them someplace.
Mm-hmm.
But in order to do that, you have to relocate some other people.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I think it's enough up at the top for a heck of a lot of black folk to do in leadership positions. And if everybody were like me, you know, didn't mind sharing leadership positions and don't mind sharing decision making and don't mind giving other individuals tasks and et cetera, you know, it wouldn't be no problem. Because I feel just like this that, you know, the ship got to move on. And as long as I can be the captain on the ship or one of the captains, so well and good. But when the waters become too tough, you know, throw me overboard and let the ship move on. But it ain't many individuals that feel like that.
Are you a native of Holmes County?
Yes, I am.
And you were a school principal?
I had been a principal within a school system. I never have been a principal per se, you know, just with a school of my own. But like, you know, in a high school where you had a building superintendent, then you'd have a high school principal and an elementary principal. And twice I served in that position. But likewise, I was a full-time classroom teacher plus a coach at the time when I was doing that. I taught for 14 years.
Now, what do you do now in addition to serving in the legislature?
I don't just do a damn thing, but serve my people. Other words, it's a full-time job with a part-time pay. And that's what makes it very difficult because, you know, when a black person get in politics, you don't get in politics, you, at least the early days, you couldn't afford to get out there and just say, this is my job to go to Jackson, and I'm down to 90 days per year to write laws and that's it. But whatever the people's problem are, they're your problem. And what I do, I advise the people and serve them, and that ranges from practicing law, which I'm not a lawyer, to social service programs and everything else. A person might want to come to you with a, he's going to a lawyer, and a lawyer advises him on something. Well, you know, he doesn't have any confidence in, maybe doesn't have any confidence in a lawyer. Maybe he's been hoodwinked before as people, and then they're going to bring it by you. Maybe the lawyer's drawn up some deeds or saved some tiles. He's going to bring it by you for you to check it out. Maybe he's tried to get on food stamps and can't get on the food stamp program. He's going to come by you for you to help him. He's trying to get on Social Security. He's going to come by you for you to help him or whatever they need. Or if it's an insurance case, if it has been sold or you before he goes to sell it, he's going to come by you and ask you. And maybe getting a birth certificate. By a lot of black folks out there don't have birth certificates. And it winds up being a full-time job 24 hours per day.
You've been in the legislature now how long?
6.5 years. This term here will be my 7th term in the legislature.
Why, in your opinion, why have there been no other blacks elected?
Well, it's the reason why no other blacks have been elected, it's a compound reason, I would say. Number one, lots of areas, I would say, have been gerrymandered in the respect where you have black counties, black majorities. They have been, districts have been consolidated with counties with a white majority, which has lessened the chances of blacks winning. And in other areas where you have black majorities, those counties have been hooked with other counties that have black majorities. And the greater the area, the less the chance for a black being elected. Now those are two things there. Those are one, that's one thing why many blacks have not been elected. And another reason is that I would say political immaturity, which means that the black politician, you know, who strictly doesn't know what it's all about. He's strictly from the school of civil rights, and he's out there trying to campaign against the white community. And the white community is very well mature in this thing. You better believe me. And it simply means that the white candidate, and many times, come right in the black candidate's backyard and do a better job politically than he does and just beat the hell out of him. You see, many of our candidates and many of our campaigns are still run like they were run in the early civil rights days, when you get up talking about people waving your fists and calling them Uncle Toms and getting hand claps and what have you. But you can't kick people in the butt and expect for them to vote for you, you know. If you go into an area, maybe the people in this area is pretty crazy about some white fella, and you know that. And they're pretty sold up on you. Okay, you've not run against him. You lay off that. Don't say anything about it. But what you do is talk about what, you know, these folks want to hear. They got problems, but deal with the problems that they have that you're going to try to solve. And in other words, if you deal with the positives rather than the negatives, you know, we'll do better. Now, those are some of the fallacies I have seen in black politics, and I've been involved with quite a bit of it. And a black candidate simply has a harder time running in the black community than does a white candidate. Good. A black candidate simply got to sell himself. He got to be almost flawless. If they can find just any speck of him, it's enough blacks not going to vote for him not to be elected. They would rather a sorry white man to get to office than a black that they think will misrepresent them. Now, the reason behind that, whenever I hear people make statements that I don't go along with, I don't jump on them for it, but I, you know, simply be cool and try to find out why, you know. But if you disagree with them, get angry with them, then you never find out. Well, their reason is simply this. Well, if we elect a black man to the job that can't do, to office that can't do the job, so that'll be a disgrace to us, and the black race will be set back 50 more years. And we're not interested in getting set back. And, you know, sometimes, like when I be helping people involved in black campaigns and trying to help people get elected, and I don't make too many meetings, you know, like I used to. I'm talking about going around speaking at political rallies. I will speak at a political rally, but I would rather go into the black community and sit around on the streets during the day and deal with the people. Now, that's why you can actually find out where the problems are. And because when you go to the political rally that they have, we're talking about black campaigns now, 9 out of every 10 that comes to the meeting, he's going to vote for that candidate anyway. You're not worried about them. But the ones you're worried about are the ones you're not getting. And when I move into a community and begin to move around where the people are at the barber shops or just sitting on the streets and began to talk about, you know, individuals, and I'm not going to support this guy, well, you know, why? You know, isn't he a brother? He's a black brother. So, well, I don't think he can do the job. Well, don't you want to give him a chance? We've had others, and they got an office in Lawrence. Well, let's see. You know, I tell you, we're struggling. And if we put this guy up there and he can't do the job, it's going to be a disgrace on the black race, and we get set back 50 years. And we done come too far to get set back. In other words, they take it and take what I would say a liability, and so far as they're concerned, and make an excess out of it.
So that, in effect, then, the techniques used in the civil rights movement to exhort people and in effect, attack those who don't go along, when you try using that same technique politically, results in dividing the people who must be united in a political campaign.
That's exactly right. Now, many of our strongest civil rights leaders are good people. You can't beat them. Like Hartman Turnbull, Holmes County, in the early days, you know, got out there to help organize FDP. Fannie Lou Hamer, just one of the strongest individuals anywhere in the world. But people like that have had difficulty when it came to the political arena, because they had to do the things that they did, the tactics they used. They had to do that. And back in those days, black folk didn't have nowhere else to go. I mean, you could afford to do it. You had to do it to arouse them. But in doing so, they, you know, created quite a few enemies in doing it. They had to do it. But nowadays, black folk have somewhere to go to. Because when you turn away from you, the white community is standing there with their arms wide open, saying, come on to me. And all they want is to get a 7% of the black vote and forget about the rest of it.
Do you get any white votes to speak of in Holmes County?
I did get white votes.
Enough to be decisive? I mean, roughly what percentage would you estimate?
You mean the percentage of my vote, would I estimate?
No, the percentage of the white vote that voted.
I would say maybe 2%, 2 to 5%. It's not a large number, but just in some precincts, you know, you got a pretty good block of white votes in 2 or 3 precincts. And for example, in Holmes County, I would say in in most every precinct in Holmes County, maybe with the exception of 1 or 2, I did carry a pretty good block of white votes.
In addition to the gerrymandering, do multi-member districts also make it difficult for blacks to get elected?
That's what I said, multi-member districts.
The gerrymandering.
Yes, like joining counties together. Now, for example, in the Delta area, you might have 2 black counties joined together. But the area is larger, see, which means a multi-member district, you might have 3 members from 2 counties. And, you know, if you just had the county cut down to 1 county, the chances would be less.
Isn't it also difficult to recruit black candidates who can afford to run for legislature?
They don't know that because they're running. You know, they see me out there and they think I'm living like a king, but they don't know the hell I'm catching trying to make a living.
Well, how do you make a living?
I ain't. I'm going in debt every day I stay in office. You know.
Does your wife work?
My wife works part-time. She's a part-time bookkeeper. And however, I do have a very small furniture operation, but the reason I had a furniture operation was because during campaign time 7-1, and before, I simply had no office or no place for people to come in and meet me. And I went into business so I could have an office and be able to afford a person to sit in the house and phone. And this business have not made me no money for me and my family. The only thing it does is take your overhead expenses and pay the individuals that work there.
When you were first elected in 67 and you got here, was it a hell of a lot different than you thought it was going to be?
No, I was set for it.
What was it like?
Well, when I was first elected and came in, they told me to come in the South interest. I don't know why they told me to come in the South interest, but somebody told me why they told me that was because, you know, Senator Bilbo's picture, statue facing the South. And they say that Jim Eastland had told them to have me to come in that way, that Bilbo was going to stop me. And after Bill, and after he didn't stop me, I understand Jim Eastland got on the phone and called Bilbo and asked him why he didn't stop me and what is all this about. Bilbo told Jim, so Jim said, when I left Mississippi, I left in your hands, the best person's hands I thought I could find, and said, I'm surprised that you letting that nigga come in there. And Jim Eastland told Bilbo, said, well, Bilbo, when you left here, we didn't have all these damn civil rights lawyers and long hats and everything, so we got them here now. Said, any damn thing I can do about it. And Bilbo said, yeah, Jim, we got some damn nigga firemen down here. And nothing I can do about it either. So we came in, and they told me to go to the back of the Capitol, the back of the house, and march to the front, and I didn't know where in the world it was. And because I never had been here before, and I guess they wanted to find out later why they wanted me to do that. So that's why they had the cameras and things set up. And one gentleman, Marvin Henley from Philadelphia, who was here in the legislature during the time of Bilbo, an old fellow, he broke up to me, and I didn't know what to expect. He was a big fellow, about 6'6", and weighed about 260. And I didn't know if this guy was coming to, throw me out or what. But I just braced myself, and he was coming on a half trot. He was coming to greet me. He's from Philadelphia, but if I had known he was from Philadelphia at that time, there's no way I'd been standing there when he got there after the Bob Chaney deal. But he got defeated this time, but however, he was one of the best friends I had. The first friend I had, and one of the best friends I had in the legislature. And, you know, when we would go to the little social gatherings and et cetera. At first, I would go in, sit down at a table. I'd more or less had a full table by myself with all the food and everything is on the table. I guess that's why I picked up this weight from 175 to 230, because I would sit at the table by myself. So finally, as I can remember, one night, Bill Minor of the Picayune Times came and sat with me. And then gradually, one by one, and after a period of 3 or 4 years, you know, things began to break down. And at first, if I would get up and talk on an issue, it simply means that it was defeated. I admit that. If I talk for it, they'd vote against it, you know, a majority would, all except maybe one or two. But then things began to change, and there was, you know, 3 or 4 that would have nerves enough to vote with me and vote the way I voted. And now it's to the point where if I talk on something and if their mind is made up, they're going to vote for it, they will not vote against it. So I even went so far as to, when I first came here, if something that I wanted bad enough, I'd get up and talk against it. You know? I'd get up and raise hell talking against it. And then when voting time come around, I'd vote for it. Well, guys could not afford to, my colleagues at that time, to go back home and, you know, so they voted with me on a particular issue. And finally, I would have guys come by my desk and tell me, say, nah, Representative Clark, I wanted to vote with you on that. You were right. Said, but I want to come back up here. And said, I've got a hell of a lot of rednecks back home. And if I do that, I'm going to just tell you straight, they're not going to send me back. Well, those kind of things, you know, I could understand. And I could understand some of the hostility. I'm not saying that I accepted it. But I knew what it was going to be like. And in many instances, it was a hell of a lot better than I thought it would be. And like various terms, like nigger and et cetera, I was here 7 years before I heard that used on the Florida House. And that wasn't used on the Florida House until this term of the legislature.
When was it used this term?
When?
Yeah, what was the circumstances?
It was the death penalty. When the death penalty bill was before the House and was being argued. It wasn't the death penalty bill, but it was when one bill was before the House and was being argued. And one of my colleagues said, you mean I had a nigger boy back home who took a club and just beat a white sheriff to death, and you mean that nigger wouldn't be put to death for that? See, and he used the term three or four times, but it was something dealing with the death penalty. And basically what he was trying to do, now this did not carry with the House, and 99 9/10% of the members of the House resented very much at him saying that. And I personally know after he used it the second time around, however I called it down before the House then, but I personally know that several of my colleagues and maybe more have gone to him and told him, damn it, don't use that term on the floor of the House anymore. If you do, we're going to sit you down. See, but basically what he was trying to do, he was trying to play the old time Mississippi politics, you know. It used to be a time, like I remember when if you came out as a white man and ran this time on your record, and if you didn't get elected, the next time you come out and run, you holler, nigga, 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 you see. And basically, that's what this guy was trying to do. He was trying to win favor of the House. Thought if he would use the term nigga. But due to the fact that black folk, you know, have the right now to mark the ballot, they're beginning to get respect of a white politician. And frankly speaking, they have a hell of a lot more respect of the white politicians than they know that they have. They got power that they're not using. There's lots more things they could demand in the political arena if they do it. But several reasons they don't demand it. Sometimes the black community is still a little hostile and don't want to become a part of the white political structure. But I feel like this. I don't care if you're white, yellow, what have you. If you my sheriff, if you my supervisor, and you spending my tax money, I'm going to demand things of you until time comes for me to try to elect somebody else. Well, I voted for you or not. See, you're spending my tax money. And black folk, if they would, you know, began to put pressure on elected officials, they could have a lot more done than they're getting done.
You think of the change in the attitudes of the legislators in the last 6.5 years,
yes,
right? Reflect the change that occurred in the state, or are they atypical?
Yes, sir. There is a change in the legislature, and this change in the legislature came because there was a change in the state. Now, for example, this little bill right here, it doesn't mean very much to some folk, but that means a hell of a lot to me. I've seen time when a bill like that would not have gotten out of the committee.
That's a consumer protection proposal.
Consumer protection bill. And we know the essence of that bill. We know what it's trying to do. We know who the folk are. It's too lazy to wait. And they get in a car and go around and hood went poor folk. We know who the folk are. They're going to run down the area of the community and set up old store and charge folk a hell of a high price. Their goods are one thing and ain't. We know that's just white folk hoodwinking black folk. Now, you ain't gonna see black, white nowhere in that bill. But every legislator out here know what that bill is aiming at though. So this within itself, you know, to a person like me, shows me that there have been a change in attitudes in the legislature.
And do you think that bill passed solely because blacks are now voting?
Solely because blacks are now voting.
But do you think blacks generally would perceive that?
Many will not. But every opportunity that I have gotten, you know, I have talked about it. It's not that I'm trying to, you know, pretend that the legislature is so great and they have done so many things for black folk. But I think, folk, whenever you make progress, you need to know about it sometime. You don't need to always be beat over the head. And I think that the black population of this state needs to know that the legislature has passed the bill dealing specifically. You know, it's going to deal with anybody who misuses anybody. But that deals almost specifically with black folk, where white folk have been manipulating black folk. And they need to know this, and if you once realize that you're making progress, then you'll, you know, move forward and make more progress.
Is there any sort of a statewide black political organization?
At the president, it's not. I'm very sorry of it. We had statewide FDP that met the last time 5 years ago. And the FDP basically had to be carried by people who was working on various, you know, in various other programs. But with the incumbent of your various anti-poverty programs and et cetera, it made it difficult for an individual to continue to live off nothing like I've had to do, like I've tried to do for my first 4 years in office. I ran all over the state for free. But I, you know, would like to go to Biloxi or Sardis or Greenville, whenever I'm called. And that's every day if I go. But you simply cannot go off for nothing, you know. Going somewhere, writing a check to get gasoline and hoping that you have some money to kiss a check before you get back to the banks. That's the kind of life you have to live if you're going to, you know, I'm talking about trying to keep a statewide black organization going. But FDP has not functioned on a statewide basis in the last 5 years. But the nearest thing to a black statewide organization you have, and I would not want to implicate them, is NAACP. This is one of the ways which black folk get their wishes, you know, communicated on a statewide basis. You have the Loyal Democrats, which is 99% black. That was the coalition group, which I'm a member of also, that unseated the regulars in 1968 at the Chicago National Democratic Convention. And again, in 72, we got the call and represented in Florida, Miami. But the regulars, the State Democratic Party, they have the election and we have the call. Now, I'll mention NAACP and the Loyal Democrats. You have various anti-poverty programs that come together, various agencies that comes together from all over the state. For example, you have your Head Start Association. And these individuals are not only concerned when they are off their, when they're off the job now, not while they're on the job. They're not only concerned about this Head Start per se, but they're concerned about the development of the whole community. And it is through a series of organizations like this where now black folk are trying to, you know, get their wishes. And you have some programs like MACE, Mississippi Action for Community Education, that have economic and social programs, social development programs, in about 19 counties. And you have Delta Ministry is in approximately 20 counties. And organizations like this sets up a network of blacks, numerous blacks to wait. However, I'm not satisfied at all with the work that's being done on the grassroots level, grassroots organizing. The thing that made Mississippi famous, you know, back in the early 60s and mid 60s, now this is not going on now. And whereas I realize that we can't just do nothing but organize, but you can't never cease to organize. You've got to let organize and be a part of your overall activities. But the resources are very limited. Now, I would like to, I wished I could, when session was out, I wished I could just go into areas, predominantly black areas, and not only predominantly black areas, but areas of the state, and began to deal with black folk and began to get them organized for the 76 election. And I feel that I have some expertise that other folk in the state haven't. You know, a lot of other folk have. I'm not saying I'm the only one. But I definitely have some expertise that I could pass on to many of the campaigns that I've seen. It's just simply a matter of fact of human relations. How do you deal with those people who stands for a good cause, and talking about other black folks? They want the same thing you want. They're trying to go the same way you're going, you know, but they're just using a different approach, or maybe using a different route to get there. Well, because, you know, he wants to approach it this way and I want to approach it that way. It doesn't make him bad. It doesn't make me Uncle Tom, because we want to use different approaches to do the same thing. And, you know, and the thing that I'd like to do is to be able to move into the community to teach black folk to work together for the good of themselves. And even in areas where you don't have a black majority, I mean, you got to rally behind one candidate or the other. You know, it's definitely got to be as much black voting as possible. And, you know, just because you don't have a black majority doesn't mean that these blacks should be thrown away to the dogs. You know, get behind a candidate, the best one. And when you put him in office, let him know you put him there. And I guarantee you he'll be responsive to you.
Do you, in effect, have a statewide constituency from the standpoint the blacks from counties other than Holmes County come to you with problems dealing with state government?
Yes, sir, they do. However, the problem is not as great now as it has been in the past for coming to me, because on a series of statewide television programs of, you know, across the five-year period, here in Jackson and Greenwood, Meridian, and on the Gulf Coast and other places, that is one thing that I have emphasized. You know, you elected your senators and your representatives, where you voted for them or not, they're yours, and use them. You elected your sheriffs and JPs and et cetera, so use them. And it's one of the things some of my colleagues say. Said, "Oh, Clark, sure turn the people loose on you." But I'm not turning people loose on them, but, you know, when we're not in session, we get $100 a month to run an office month. And whereas, you know, I'd like to go to Cleveland County and take care of people's problems down there. I'd like to go over in Jasper County, but this $100 a month simply won't allow me to do it effectively. So as many of the black folk can make their elected officials serve them as possible, that'll make for a better government on a local level, that'll get more black folk involved, and it will lessen the responsibilities that I have. I'm not dodging responsibilities, but they're just simply too many. And I've caught hell trying to develop a staff. I've given up on that. You know, every time you're trying to develop a staff, get monies from someplace, you're too political. They want to know, ask me, what are the other white representatives doing? Well, see, my position is far different from the other white representative's position. My position is no different from that of the governor of the state of Mississippi. because they're looking to me at Jackson, at Alcorn College, at Ole Miss, Delta State. I got constituents there. They all want me to come there for free or to do things for them. And my position is more like the governor's rather than just another representative. And I still, you know, do what I can for the black folk on the outside of my district. But I have had to cut out a lot of my traveling through necessity and trying to, for example, some of the things that they might want me to do, blacks in Greenville or what have you, after talking to them or getting a letter from them, now rather than trying to do it myself, I pick the phone up and call some white official in that area. I said, this is some thing that some of your folk want done up there. And then I pick the phone up and call them back and tell them, check such and such one. He's going to take care of that thing. Well, that's good. That's all they want. They just want to get it done.
Is are fear and intimidation an important reason for blacks voting for whites?
No. In a very few areas of the state, you still have fear and you still have intimidation. Now, I had to argue this point on the floor of the House when we passed a resolution sending to Washington, D.C., asking them to lift the 1965 Voting Rights Act. And some of the representatives got there and said there's no fear, no intimidation. But I'm sure they was honest. They simply didn't know. See, their lawyers, the doctors,
weren't the legislators themselves intimidated because only five voted for that resolution?
So, was we intimidated?
Weren't the white legislators intimidated because only five of them, I guess you were one of them, voted against that resolution?
No, I don't guess that intimidated them, but they felt that, you know, they think that when they go down and vote that morning, everything's going smoothly, and then when they get a report on intimidation, well, people around the poll tells them, so them niggas ain't done nothing to lie, and they simply don't believe it. But in many areas of the state, some areas of the state, we still have it. And other areas of the state, you simply don't have any.
Is intimidation and fear still much of a factor in blacks not voting?
With some of the older blacks, it is. It's very hard for a black man from my age up to when he walks into the booth not to get nervous. It's very hard. I mean, because it's associated with the past, and when you walk into a white community, and more or less an all-white environment, that's very unfair to a black voter to expect him to be normal and to go on and to vote his wishes. In particular, many of the blacks, you know, still we have quite a few blacks who can't read or write, and if they can, these long ballots like in a general election, it's very hard for them to understand. And lots of time, rather than to let a white person have to let go ahead and try to do it themselves and maybe mess it up. Maybe mark for two individuals within in the same bracket, a mark outside the box, anything like that, and get it thrown out. I've introduced for the past 3 or 4 years a law that would allow any individual who wanted to let a member of his immediate family help him to mark his ballot. And in this case, every individual, you know, that possibly can't understand the ballot would have a kid in his family, maybe 6th or 7th grade, that would go in the box with him. Then would happen to mark his ballot. But this bill has not gotten out of the committee either time. There was another bill was introduced in the
Senate. Why do you think it hadn't gotten out of committee?
I simply don't know. Many members on the election committee have told me this is a good bill, they think this and that and other, but it just has not come up. I'd hate to speculate, because if I did speculate, it would be a negative speculation. The only thing I would simply say, it would give blacks a little bit more power because it would assure that a black man's vote more than likely would not be a spot ballot. For example, in a portion of a district that I ran in this year, in 71, in one of the precincts there, they was nice, they was letting people break the rules and everything, and was no intimidation whatsoever. But on an average, 75% of the ballots was thrown out. See, 75% was thrown out. Black folks swarmed out to the polls and voted, but black candidates got their butts tore up in that particular precinct because of throwing out ballots.
On technicalities?
On technicalities. And if you had to, you know, a person's child going down, having a father, the mother to mark the ballot, then these ballots would not be thrown out, and possibly other blacks would win.
Do you think the legislative reaction against the bill is primarily a fear of offending the local election officials, or do you think it's deeper than that?
I would say let's talk about the election commission, the election committee, because it never has gotten to the toll legislature. But the election, local election officials need intimidating because we don't have no election laws in the state of Mississippi. We got something on the book. But I've introduced legislation for the past 7 years that would require the Attorney General of this state or somebody of this state to hold workshops on elections, and it would require all these election managers to attend these workshops, because you go from one district to another one and you're going to find an election being held in a different manner. See, what you have blacks with that little handbook prepared by the civil rights attorneys saying this is the proper procedure for voting and et cetera. Then when you go down to the poll, they find it just the object of what they feel, of what they know it is supposed to be. And I'm saying they need intimidating. When I say intimidating, I simply mean they need training. Elections should be held in a similar manner, so a person, when he goes to the poll, he can know what to expect. That was another bill that had passed the Senate. I started to tell you a few minutes ago, and came to the floor of the House, which means it would give an election manager authority to ask for any kind of identification he wanted to in order for you to be able to vote. And if you didn't have that identification, he could deny you the right to vote. And that passed the Senate. It came out of the election committee, came to the floor of the House for a vote. And I got up and argued against the bill. And we sent the damn thing back to the committee from whence it came. Didn't pass it.
If you hadn't been there, there's no doubt in your mind that would have passed.
If I had not been there, there's no doubt in my mind it was going to pass. And if they had...
That was this year?
This year.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. Tell us about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Would you consider that bill designed to do anything other than intimidate black voters?
Not a thing in the world but to intimidate black voters. That's all it was designed to do.
So what we hear from some of the other legislators that race is sort of thing in the past and not really a factor anymore. How do you react to that?
It is not as strong as it has been in the past, but all of us would like to put it behind us, but we can still see it's there. We know it's there. Now, for example, that particular vote, if we had to press the machine for that, that bill never would have been sent back to the committee. But see, when one of my colleagues got up and moved after I finished talking, that we sent it back to the committee from whence it came, well, you take that on a voice vote. Now, if the speaker had said, you know, the noes have it, and we're going to vote on it, well, then if they had pushed the button, it would have been about five or six of us pushed the button against it. Now, this resolution that passed, one of my colleagues made the motion that be sent back to the committee from whence it came. And, you know, we voted on it. And the ayes for sending it back was about 10 to 1. But the speaker said the noes have it. And when he said the noes have it, that took a roll call vote. And with the roll call vote, they simply was not going to vote against it. Now, things like this can show you that, you know, racism to a certain extent is still there. And, you know, what I'm simply talking about, we don't have what we had in the past, people going around saying, you know, you're a nigger and we're not going to stay in this hotel with you, we're not going to allow you to come up into the Capitol and all like that. But you can see it as you move around the Capitol here. Now, we don't have a single black person employed here other than the custodians. Now, the people, the secretaries and everything, all out here, they are nice to me and they are efficient. But things like that show you that, you know, racism is still a factor.
No black pages?
Well, you know, you've got black page of pages come once per week. And you have a black page occasionally now. But,
they're not hired. They just, that's an honorary thing.
He gets paid, get his per diem while he's here. But you see, a legislator has 2 weeks. You know, he can bring a page. You know, he can bring two pages while he's here, and a page stays for a week. And you have a few black pages other than mine. But I'm talking about high positions. From the first floor of this Capitol all the way to the fourth floor.
And at the governor's office, at least one black.
You got James Rhodes in there, but... You got him on there on a poverty salary. And
what's his salary, you know?
About $6,000.
Is that all?
That's all. And, custodians make more than that.
You got the members of the governor's staff, I presume they make more than that.
And I would assume they do. And if he's going to get a man, let's get a man and pay him a professional salary.
So, how is Runnels viewed in the black community, the first black aide on the governor's staff?
It's a split view, I would say. Many feel that he's being used by the governor, but I've seen this in the black community, even on the local level, on lots of local levels,